Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
From the land of Grand Theft University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 12th day of August. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This morning, USDA released the corn production and WASD figures for the month of August. They show that U.S. farmers will raise a 14.032 billion bushel corn crop this year. That's 172 million bushels heavier than it was last month. The first survey-based corn yield forecast now at a record 167.4 bushels. To the acre, up 2.1 bushels from last month's trend-based projection. Projected ending stocks for the year are raised slightly to 1.808 billion bushels. That's what'll be left over when we get to the fall of 2015. The projected season average farm price for corn lowered 10 cents on both ends, the range from $3.55 to $4.25. For soybeans, that range is $9.35 to $11.35, and it was dropped 15 cents on both ends. The first survey-based soybean yield forecast is at a record 45.4 bushels to the acre. That's 0.2 bushels above last month and 2.1 bushels above last year. And with minimal supply gain, soybean exports and crush are unchanged, leaving ending stocks projected at 430 million bushels. We'll discuss all these numbers today during the closing market report. Darrell Good will be along with Wayne Nelson and Steve Platt.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's how Chicago reacted to the USDA figures this morning. September wheat at $5.38, down 8.5 cents. That for the soft red. The hard red was down 10.5 cents at 613 and a quarter. December corn at 369, up 3/4. Nearby September at 358 and a half, a penny and 3/4 higher. The March at 381 and a quarter, up 3.5 cents. And May at 390, 3/4 cent higher. July at $3.97, up a penny for next year. August beans, $12.90, a settlement price down 24.75. September 10.94 and a quarter, down 14.25. November beans down 13.75 at 10.59 and a half, and January 10.68 and a quarter, 13.5 cents lower. Bean meal down 20 cents. Bean oil 26 cents higher. Live cattle futures in the August at 149.62 and a half, for $3 lower. August feeders at 214.55, down 292 and a half, and August live lean hogs, that is, at $114.07 and a half, 47.5 cents lower. This is Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures September contract at $97.27 a barrel, down 81 cents. The RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, $2.73. That's down 2 1/10 of a cent. And ethanol futures at $2.07 1/10 of a cent. That's just about half of a cent lower for the day. Natural gas at $3.95 7/10, down 8/10 of a cent, and diesel fuel at $2.84 4/10, 3.5 cents lower. Gold futures at $1,309 finished 30 cents higher, and the U.S. dollar at 81.49. That's up 0.04 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. As it comes from the National Weather Service, partly sunny skies today on a high of 71 degrees. Northwest winds at 15 miles an hour. They'll gust to 22. It'll be cool outside, comparatively speaking, for a mid-August day. Tonight, partly cloudy at a low of 54. Wednesday, sunny skies and 77 with a northwest wind at 6 to 8 miles an hour. And then tomorrow evening, mostly clear and a low of 57. West winds at 5 to 7. Thursday, sunny skies and 79 degrees. West winds at 5 to 7. Becoming northerly in the afternoon, and then that'll take us to a low of 56 degrees on Thursday night. Under partly cloudy skies, they'll clear out to mostly sunny on Friday, with a high near 79 degrees. Friday night, partly cloudy and 62. Saturday, a chance of showers, some rainfall, thunderstorms, partly sunny otherwise, and 81. Those showers and thunderstorms will continue into Saturday evening, mostly cloudy skies and 65 for the low. And on Sunday, partly sunny skies and a high of 85 degrees. A quick reminder that Thursday of this week, Agronomy Day is right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Be sure to visit us on the South Farms. We'll kick off the research farm tours at 7 a.m. I'll be there to help guide you through the process. See you Thursday morning on the South Farms.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Daryl Good, ag economist at the U of I, to discuss this morning's USDA WASDE and crop production figures. It released 167.4 bushels to the acre as an average corn yield across the nation. This was much smaller than the trade was expecting, Daryl.
It really was. I think depending on which survey you looked at, the market was expecting something 170 to 171, so you'd have to say that this number is about 3 bushels an acre less than expected. And when you put that on a production basis, that's about a quarter billion bushels difference in crop size compared to what the market was thinking a few minutes before the report was released.
Market does not particularly believe the report. Their expectations quite likely now are that a big crop will get bigger. Is that the case?
You know, tongue-in-cheek, you'd say a big crop gets bigger unless it doesn't. I mean, the history is a little bit checkered on that, and it's a little bit hard to forecast that because you can't really forecast all the weather variables that you need to forecast in order to be confident in that. You know, in most years, or in some years, a big crop does get bigger because you have pretty favorable weather in August and into early September, and that favors continued development of a big crop. In other years, that doesn't happen, and the big crop doesn't necessarily get bigger. So clearly the market is expecting that, particularly now that the initial forecast was below the average trade guess. They are even more confident, I think, that the crop estimate will get bigger.
You and Scott Irwin earlier in the year wrote a piece about the weather and what it might mean to the marketplace, that it looked awfully good, but June was not quite as some had expected, and July's been pretty dry.
No, that's right. We look specifically at previous years when the U.S. average yield was well above trend. We picked out 6 years when that had happened since 1960 and tried to chronicle what kind of weather we had during the growing season that led to those kind of yields. And what you found is that the summer was generally cooler than average, with rainfall near average amounts in all 3 months, June, July, and August. And then we noted that this year differed because June was extremely wet, particularly in the western Corn Belt. And then subsequent to writing that piece, we also found out that July was drier than normal. And the one characteristic that has been consistent with previous big crops has been a cool summer. But the rainfall pattern certainly has deviated. And anybody that's using a crop weather model to try to forecast yields, I think, would not have been forecasting the extremely high numbers that some were expecting.
Given that, as you look forward, it will be about not only supply, but demand for this crop. What are your expectations?
I look for corn consumption to continue to increase a bit during the year ahead. In the August WASDE report, the USDA did raise their forecast from the July number, but still are a bit below what we consumed in 2014, the 2013-14 marketing year. I would be a little more optimistic, thinking that with the good profit margins we're seeing in all the sectors that use corn, that these low prices would begin to generate a faster rate of consumption. So basically in each category, ethanol, exports, and feed use, I would be a bit more optimistic than USDA forecasts that we saw today, and that means that probably we're going to keep year-ending stocks well below 2 billion bushels, maybe even below the 1.8 forecast in today's WASDE report. So it'll be important how that unfolds, and certainly the market will monitor that closely, looking at all the indicators and then the real-time information about how fast we are using the crop. But I think there's reason to be pretty optimistic at this point.
Turn your attention, Daryl, now to the soybean crop. USDA says this, on a bushels per acre average, will be the largest crop the United States has ever raised.
It really will be. 45.4 bushels is the August forecast. That would exceed the 2009 record by 1.4 bushels. And I think that's pretty consistent with market expectations, pretty consistent with the weather pattern we've had this year and pretty consistent with current crop condition ratings. And as a result, I don't think the forecast provided a lot of surprise to the soybean market. We're on line for a very large crop this year. Probably the biggest uncertainty moving forward on the supply side will be acreage of soybeans. We're still working primarily with the results of the June survey of planted and expected harvested acreage. And there's some speculation about whether all of those intended acres got planted or not. And on August 15th, we'll begin to see the monthly Farm Service Agency reports about prevented acreage. And it will be interesting to see the magnitude of those as they unfold August, September, October, as they get information from producers whether we did see more than expected prevented acres on beans. But right now, it certainly looks like a very large soybean crop unfolding this year.
The trade is anticipating the August 15th release of those FSA numbers. They have been out for many years in the public now. But the numbers are preliminary, and they build over time until USDA actually puts them into place, normally in the October crop production report. How much can we divine from the first release of those numbers?
You know, in my opinion, not a lot, because FSA is limited to the farmer reports that they have received and processed to date. And by the August 15th report, that is a varying percentage of all the reporting farmers, but it tends to be a pretty small percentage. And what we've seen is that both the prevented acreage numbers and the planted acreage numbers that farmers certify tend to get bigger as you go from August forward. And the magnitude of that change has not been consistent from year to year. So I don't think we can read a lot into it unless it's, for example, an unusually large or small number that comes out in August. And you would say, even though we expect this to change, the starting point is much different than we might have expected.
And finally, at this point during the marketing year, and I think this is correct, you have been, at least until this point, remaining advocate of sales of new crop soybeans, but that corn might well be stored, if you haven't priced it at this point, for higher prices in the spring. Is that still the case?
In my opinion, I think that is the correct way to go. I think soybeans are still a bit overpriced. The ratio relative to corn is still over 3, which is historically high. I think there's room for spot soybean prices to come down. Similarly, I think the market got way too bearish on corn with the big production estimates. I think they've not yet come around to seeing the big increase in consumption that we might have. And I think the market is still undervalued on corn. And until that changes, I would still want to be an owner of anything that hasn't been previously priced.
Darryl, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Darryl Good, ag economist at the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Now let's check in with our regular Tuesday afternoon analyst on this 12th day of August, Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
USDA, of course, releasing a bit of a surprise in the corn market this morning and substantiating, I suppose, a very large soybean crop, the largest on record. Which of those two numbers do you think is most important to the trade?
Well, I think right now the bean number probably is, Todd, and I say that out of the simple fact is if we looked at Informa's numbers, which generally try to guess what the government's going to say, they were just slightly above them at 168. We have historically said that the government doesn't like to put all their eggs out. You know, they're putting a little bit out at a time, and until they see a little bit more proof of what is actually yielding or what might happen, they're going to be conservative on this report. So, and I think the trade pretty much feels that. But the beans were the number out there that everybody thinks is supposed to be good, but there's a lot of talk about, you know, too much water some places, later planted some places, even if there are lots and lots of acres. So this number out here to start with, when generally a big crop gets bigger, is more important than the beans, I think, as far as telling us what we have.
Now, are you of a mind for the soybeans? The producers ought to be locking in some new crop pricing?
Well, you know, we have, and we'd like to see just a little bit more of a pop back up here to go ahead and do that. I think that, you know, we have a chance of working back up a little closer to the $11 mark before we do that. But, you know, I would have to agree with Dr. Good and say that the beans have the potential, especially looking down at South America and seeing that they're going to increase their bean production another 5 or 6%, that basically beans have more of a chance of going down than corn does at these levels.
What did the trade feel in the chatter after the report this morning? How did that ensue, and what did it feel like to you?
Well, I think that basically along the way, there were some people surprised that corn sold off early, not surprised it come back later with the lower number like that. There was many advisory firms out there today that in their one little comment said under 168 would be a positive number. And we come in there, and here we are slammed down right away. But, you know, we come back and close 10 cents off that number, and I think that that's sort of, as they stopped and looked at everything, they realized it wasn't quite as negative as what they maybe saw in some of the flash comments that come from the algo traders.
And finally, short-term usage for corn. Will it be good between now and August, and will there be quick ships?
Yeah, there's going to be quick shipments for both corn and beans. It's going to be available. The ethanol demand continues to stay very strong. And a lot of the farmers' hands, it's pretty tight hands.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the closing market report for this Tuesday afternoon. One item, quickly, if you have not put into your schedule to join me and the rest of the Ag research team here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. I'm just the reporter, of course. For Agronomy Day this Thursday at 7 a.m. on the South Farms, please do now. You can check it out. Look up Agronomy Day and University of Illinois. Well, this morning's reports are not the only ones the United States Department of Agriculture has released so far this week. Yesterday afternoon, of course, it released the weekly crop progress report. It shows that around the 18 corn-producing states, 54% of the crop has now entered the dough stage. That's compared to the five-year average of 46%. 11% of the crop is dented compared to the five-year average of 16%. The corn crop is said to be in 52% good condition, 21% excellent. That's exactly the same as last week when you combine the two categories, but the combination has changed. The excellent condition is down one this week, and the good category is up one. Now turn your attention to the soybeans, where 92% of the crop is blooming compared to the rolling five-year average of 72%. 72% of the crop is setting pods, by the way, and the rolling five-year average is 65%. 53% of the soybean crop is in good condition, 17% excellent. That's for a total of 70%. Last week, that number was 71% in total, and for comparison, last year it was just 64%, good to excellent. Now, here are the state statisticians in Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and Minnesota with updates from their regions.
This is Katie Annell, agricultural statistician for the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office. Temperatures for the week averaged 1.7 degrees below normal. Rain fell over much of eastern Iowa on Monday. The most rainfall came Tuesday evening to Wednesday afternoon over the southwest one half of Iowa. Light rain fell over this region again on Thursday. Total rain for the week varied from sprinkles at Forest City and Clinton to 6.29 inches at Denison. Average precipitation for the week was 1.13 inches. 0.17 inches above normal, decreasing 4 percentage points from last week. Subsoil moisture levels rated 78% adequate to surplus, while topsoil remained unchanged at 74%. Over half of Iowa's corn acreage was in the dough stage or beyond, 2 weeks ahead of 2013 and 1 week ahead of the five-year average. 7% of the corn crop reached the dent stage, ahead of last year but 4 percentage points behind normal. 76% of the corn crop was reported in good to excellent condition. Over three-quarters of the soybean acreage was setting pods or beyond, almost 30 points above the previous year. 75% of the soybean crop was rated in good to excellent condition. This is Katie Andel reporting from the USDA NASS Iowa Field Office.
This is Todd Ballard, Deputy Director with USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Heartland Region, serving Illinois. Statewide temperatures averaged 72.1 degrees, 1.7 degrees below normal. Statewide precipitation averaged 1.45 inches, 0.51 inches above normal for the 7-day period ending Sunday, August 11th. And topsoil moisture supplies improved last week to 1% very short, 17% short, 76% adequate, and 5% surplus. Growing degree days since May 1 came in at 154 days, or 6 days behind the historic average. Corn in the dough stage was reported at 77%, compared to 47% 1 year ago, and 62% for the 5-year average. 17% was reported in the dent stage, and this compares to 5% 1 year ago, and 23% for the 5-year average. Overall, the state's corn crop was rated at 1% very poor, 3% poor, 14% fair, 52% good, and 30% as excellent. Soybean blooming advanced to 94%, compared to 89% a year ago, and 91% for the 5-year average. 79% of the crop was setting pods, compared to 60% last year, and 66% for the 5-year average. Overall, the state's soybean crop was rated as 1% very poor, 3% poor, 18% fair, 56% good, and 22% excellent. This has been Todd Ballard with the Heartland Region of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, serving Illinois.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop progress and condition report. In spite of the heavy precip received earlier in the season, most Minnesota farmers would like to see their row crops receive additional moisture. Some farmers have started to spray for aphids. 94% of the corn crop was at or beyond the silking stage. That's up 9 points from the previous week, with 70% of the crop in good to excellent condition. 94% of the soybean crop has reached the blooming stage, with 74% of the soybean acres setting pods. That's up 19 points from the previous week. Soybean conditions rated 65% good to excellent. 81% of the spring wheat crop was turning color beyond, with 6% of the crop harvested. 54% of the spring wheat crop was in good to excellent condition. 93% of the oat crop was turning color and beyond. And at 54% complete, the oat harvest is the only Minnesota crop ahead of average. Oat conditions decreased to 62% good to excellent. All hay conditions decreased slightly to 69% good to excellent. And pasture conditions decreased to 64% good to excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
This is Glenn Goodrich with the Great Lakes Regional Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service with the Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending August 10, 2014. The statewide average temperature for the week was 71.7 degrees, which is 1.3 degrees below normal. Recorded precipitation ranged from 0 to 1.94 inches, with a statewide average of 0.49 inches. Corn silking is 99%, versus last year's 96% and 96% 5-year average. Corn doughing is 56%, versus last year's 30% and 29% 5-year average. Corn denting is 17%, versus 0% last year and 6% 5-year average. Evidence of nitrogen depletion from previous rain events is now becoming apparent in some corn fields. Soybeans blooming is at 96%, versus 89% last year and 89% 5-year average. Soybean setting pods is 80%, versus 64% last year and 61% 5-year average. Some farmers have observed leaf curl in soybeans. With the dry weather this week, irrigation was running where available. With corn doughing and soybean setting pods, most farmers are hoping for more consistent rains going into the next couple weeks. Dry conditions have been excellent for cutting hay and for spraying. Other activities for the week included preparing for the state fair, preparing for harvest season, and roadside mowing. That concludes this week's Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending August 10, 2014. This is Glenn Goodrich reporting.
Our thanks, of course, go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across their regions.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
It's National Toasted Almond Bar Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1759, Thomas Andrew Knight was born. A British horticulturalist, he initiated the field of fruit breeding, and he investigated the use of greenhouses, plant nutrition, fertilization, and pest control. In 1812, Ephraim Ball was born. An American inventor, he was responsible for creation and manufacture of the Ball's Blue Plow. He also patented what was the first widely successful two-wheeled flexible bar mower. In 1851, Isaac Singer was granted a patent for the first sewing machine with a double rocking treadle. In 1948, Harry Beardsley died. He invented stainless steel in 1912. The discovery of the steel, chromium, and nickel alloy revolutionized the cutlery industry. The added metals produced a surface much more rust-resistant than steel alone. And in 2004, Anthony John Clark died, an English molecular biologist. He was a founder of applying molecular technology to farm animals. In 1990, he was successful in producing a sheep giving milk with human proteins. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Be sure to drop by the South Farms on this Thursday morning for the University of Illinois Agronomy Day event. Kicks off at 7, runs through the noon hour. You can make your way on the rack wagons into the research fields just to the south of the main building there. Starts at 7 o'clock and talk to all the researchers, including Aaron Hager, Emerson Nafziger, Mike Gray, and company this Thursday morning at 7 a.m.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
It is a Tuesday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural energies for the day is Stephen Platt. He's at Archer Financial Services in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Stephen.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's talk a little bit about what's been happening in the energy markets, and maybe we should begin with crude oil for the day. It's trading at $97.41 a barrel and below $100.
Yeah, and certainly the market has been under pressure, and I think that's been a surprise to a lot of people, given the geopolitical events that we've been confronting in both Iraq and the Ukraine. They have really failed to have much impact on the market, and instead the market seems to be responding to its own fundamentals in terms of surplus barrels in the Atlantic Basin. A lot of that's due to reduced refinery runs in Asia, also barrels being displaced by U.S. production and the large increases we've seen there, along which in turn has led to lower imports into the U.S. One example is certainly Nigeria. They had been running about 350,000 barrels of exports into the U.S. over the past 2 years. Now that's only under 100,000 barrels. So we have seen a real change in the dynamics of this market.
Why is it, do you suppose, that is the case? Is it just that the available energy coming out of the United States and from other sources, other than where those three choke points happen to be for shipping, that is, in the Mideast, are available now, and it might not be as important as it was, though I would think still terribly important for energy and crude oil to be able to move out of those areas?
Well, certainly we have seen a lot of movement out of the main producers. Saudi Arabia has taken on higher production levels, which has helped offset some of the declines that we've seen in Iranian and also Iraqi production levels. So also Libya has also come on a little bit higher production levels as well, which have moved to Europe and helped ease any tightness in that area as well.
Any final word on the agricultural winters?
Well, we're still fighting some pretty strong headwinds, I think, in terms of a global increase in supplies, OPEC supplies increasing, and the industry stocks in some of the key areas are also showing some pretty marked increases as well. That's going to work against the market. I do think, though, in terms of producers, you probably have to look at the diesel market here to maybe secure some of your needs as we move into plannings, given the risk-reward that looks favorable at this time in terms of maybe doing some coverage.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, Stephen.
Thank you.
Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services, joins us once a month on a Tuesday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural energy markets. Helps us wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Remember, you can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Yovi Extensions, Todd Gleason.